Chapter 22. Honey. Not just a caller. It would have been easy enough. You could have downloaded a caller into Jimmy before I came and took up all his headspace. This is something far more data-heavy, far more ambitious. And for a moment I think of my assessment of the man and assume I must have got it wrong. For someone to have this range of vision, this insanely forward-thinking dream, has Warner S. Thompson been an unacknowledged tech genius all this time? Has he been playing chess and the rest of us were just playing checkers? But then I think of the way that circle of ideas curves back to meet its origin. If you make an impossible thing happen, then maybe it's because you're a super genius who finds the way to realize the impossible. Or maybe it's because you're the spoiled child, just shouting until someone lets you have your way. I can't know if this was precipitated by me and Hum OS and Bees, but even if so, this must always have been the plan. The groundwork is right here in Jimmy's head. The very reason I'm in a position to appreciate it is proof of concept. The medium is the message. And I'm the message, and Jimmy's the medium. It's Thompson. In a very real way, it's Thompson. All those people we saw, they weren't being slapped with a hierarchy with a capital H and turned into slaves. They were getting a big old forced upload of data into their capacious headspace. And the upload was Thompson. His personality sent all the cold kilometers over from Earth. All of them were Thompson, because apparently just dreaming of being undisputed king of Mars wasn't enough for him. Just ruling over fellow mortals wasn't the power trip he craved. Because they're all Thompson. That smile, that handshake, every one of them a home for his personality. He's made himself into a parasitic distributed intelligence network, one that doesn't even need to grow its own bodies like Hum OS does, one that doesn't even allow its body's autonomy like Hum OS does. So where she's a council of linked minds, he's turned himself into a rigid feudal system. Because otherwise, how could it work? You can't just turn the entire population into the same megalomaniacal arch-villain and expect them to actually cooperate. You'd have too many hail to the chiefs and nobody doing any work. And just as I'm sure, Thompson collared his closest staff back on Earth because he couldn't trust them else, now he's even collaring himself. That handshake is your Southampton Exchange, establishing who's dominant over who, creating a hierarchy of Thompsons across the colony based on who knows what, random chance, or maybe attributes of each host. But sure is sure, they'll organize into a pyramid with one Thompson on top and all the other instances of himself enforcedly subservient, because he knows what a treacherous son of a bitch he is. On the way back, Jimmy and I have a free and frank exchange of views about the evils of drug addiction, which I lose. I just don't have the mental energy to save him from himself, what with just being a copy running in his head, and my moral authority is on shaky ground anyway. He's obviously very unhappy, and I'm beginning to suspect that the likely widespread drug use on Mars is built into the system tolerances. You must get a killer seasonal affective disorder this far out from the sun, where your only seasons are winter and very winter. Jimmy's depressed and anxious, and what I can glean of his bio data is all red lights, and I have to literally take his hands off him to stop him overdosing by accident because he keeps trying to take more pills. So I release the block and let him enjoy what's already in his system. We have a stern talk about not letting it get in the way, and I suddenly feel I know what it's like to be a parent of a sulky teenager. Back at the ranch with Marmalade, I tell them what's going on. Thompson, Braintree, the whole picture. At the same time, I'm working out a way to get a signal to Bees, because I'm out of my league here, and any help's going to be welcome. There's a pause from both of them, and the finger I'm keeping on the pulse of Jimmy's mental state tells me of another drop in motivation, so that he's about to pop another pill before I stop him. Look, I appreciate this isn't an ideal situation, I say, but I'm trying to think of what we can do. I need to...
Is that it, then?
Jimmy asks. He sounds really low, actually. No, I told you, I'm trying... I start, but he doesn't mean that.
Is that the point of this? Is that what we've been for? All this time?
He sat on the hard floor, not looking at Marmalade or focusing on anything much.
They brought us to build a city on Mars, man, he says quietly.
Not his usual whine at all.
And I know it's shit up here, but still. We're building a city on Mars. When I volunteered, I needed the work. I had nothing but some tech skills. My family home was under 8 feet of sea in a dead city. I lived in a camp. They said, come to Mars. We'll have to rebuild you, but still, it's Mars. I mean, building the first city on another planet. Something to be proud of, right? But now it's all a joke. Now it's all so some son of a bitch can take over our heads and set up Circle Jerk City using our hands and our bodies? Fuck, man. That's...
I hadn't realized he was proud of what he did. I don't think he realized, until just now, that being here, doing this, actually meant something, gave him self-esteem his life had lacked. And I'm not saying it made me like Jimmy Martin, exactly, but I have to reevaluate him a little. And at least I can tell him, no, Jimmy.
What now?
Braintree fit you with the makings of this, it's true. But you were already biomodded before you went to them for the headwear. For what it's worth, the Hell City project is bona fide, because Thompson never built a damn thing of his own, only suckered onto whatever someone else made that was going in the right direction. So no, Jimmy, it wasn't just for this. It's been hijacked, that's all. He's looking up now, though there's no me there to look at.
That right?
I promise, Jimmy. Now stop reaching for the drugs, or I swear I will slap you with your own hand. Marmalade snickers, but that's given Jimmy another bleak thought.
Do they know?
What do you mean?
When the fuck it takes them over? Are they still in there? Only I remember what it was like when you did it to me. Trapped in my own head, can't talk, can't move. Prisoner's dilemma, you said? How's that for a fucking dilemma? And that was just for a little bit. What you're saying, he's here for good. I mean, he won't keep them awake in here forever while he does his thing, right? He'll put them to sleep, won't he? They won't be...
It is said that Charles Darwin lost his faith in God over wasps and caterpillars. There are wasps that paralyze caterpillars and lay their eggs on them, bury the whole horrible bundle in a burrow, and then the eggs hatch and the grubs feed and eventually the caterpillar dies. And Darwin really, really wanted to believe that God, in his infinite mercy, would gift the caterpillars with a mechanism to turn off the pain and the awareness of what was happening to them. To not be present when the egg case was split open by those questing, hungry jaws. And yet his budding theory of evolution had no room for mercy. If the caterpillar had been taken by the wasp, it wasn't going to become a butterfly and make more caterpillars. Nothing would inherit any part of it, save for the wasp inheriting its proteins. There was no evolutionary pressure to grant doomed caterpillars an anesthetic, because only the undoomed ones would contribute to the next generation. And in just the same way, there is absolutely no reason for Warner S. Thompson, or any of his people, to have spared a moment or spent a cent to lessen the plight of all the people whose bodies they plan to usurp. And I have nothing comforting to say to Jimmy. At around that time, a signal from Bees reaches me, coming in across a tangle of relays from some cultist den in Hell City. Bees channel. I warned you that action might make things worse. My channel. Aslan is dead. I thought you meant worse like that. Except maybe where Bees is now, she doesn't, or even can't, care about something like that. Bees channel. Worse is worse. I am having to move up my own plans. The human presence on this planet is likely to be more problematic to me from here on in. My channel. Bees, I need your help. Bees channel. I am no longer inclined to busy myself in the affairs of others. And she very nearly means it. But I think there's just enough left of the bees I revived after Campesh, the bees I grew from recorded memories and dumb insects at Cornell. Because all bees are one bees, and it's that bees, the bees who was with Rex and Dragon and me, all those decades ago. My channel. Bees, it's me, honey. A long pause. But I know bees well enough that it's one for effect. She never needed that much thinking time. Bees channel. I have preserved my adapts, the humans I have suborned for my purposes. I will direct them to you. They will assist. That is all, honey. I am no tame hive anymore. I do not make sweetness and light for humans or for bears. Any help is good help right now. Thank you, bees. Then Marmalade lets out a grunt. She's been quiet, but apparently that means she's been busy rather than just brooding. Like any good bear, she's been in the system, scavenging for signal strength as a great data download starts to ebb, as everyone who's going to become Warner S. Thompson gets taken over, and the torrent slows to a trickle. Marmalade has access to some cameras, and she's found where Sugar is.
You can fix her.
Her voice is like Rex's voice once was, before I found him a better one. All roar and rumble. I get a spike from Jimmy's brain chemistry. Pure fear, just from hearing it. Fix her as in remove the Thompson download?
Fix her as in give her back to herself,
Marmalade says, looming.
You're so clever. Make it more than words. Do something.
And Jimmy's telling me, will I just fucking do it? Because Marmalade scares the hell out of him. And I should try. Not only because there's a fellow bear here, some distant kin who wants me to rescue her friend. Because if I can do it, maybe that's the answer. Maybe I will weed this garden of Thompsons until there are none left. If his roots don't go too deep. I see where Sugar is. Looks like some sort of work crew. Some job lot of low-status Thompsons all getting back to the business of keeping Hell City running. There's still a lot of traffic in the system, and I don't fancy my chances of achieving anything at a distance. Time to go walkabout and get close. Let's do it, I tell Marmalade, to everyone's relief. Skulking across the city is eerie. We dodge groups whenever we see them. Human, because they're all bands of men, and some women, with Thompson's damnable smile, just walking about looking at the walls of Hell's City as though everything is unfamiliar and not up to standard. One man stood using a screen as a mirror, poking at his own face, examining the work the biomod surgeons had put in place. His eye was red where he'd put a finger in it, and there were bruises all over. But he didn't stop, and he didn't stop smiling. We dodged the bioforms as well, because right now, we don't know where we stand with them. They might be collared somehow, or just obeying human instructions because that's what they're used to. They might be attacking humans on sight out of a revulsion I can absolutely understand. And we don't see many. Jimmy reckons they're outside at the works, most of them. And we see absolutely no mixing between the two groups. Halfway down the service corridors and back alleys to where Marmalade says sugar is, we run into a little motorized cart, skewed across the corner, so Jimmy has to drive it sideways before we can get past.
"Ain't good,"
he says. Well, there isn't much in this situation that I'd characterize as good, because I am, frankly, rattled.
"No. Who's doing the work? The fixing work? This Thompson guy, he took a course in how to keep stuff running on mods, did he?"
I wouldn't have thought so.
"Shit."
Jimmy shakes his head, which is always annoying when I'm trying to use his eyes.
"I mean, you ain't got access to my memories, right? You're in my head and you can steal my body, but you ain't got me. Not unless I decide to tell you shit."
I stop. Or rather, if it had been my body, I'd have been stopped by the thought. But of course, Jimmy just carries me along. I suspect this is a part of the plan that Thompson and his people didn't think through. Unless each instance of him can coerce his host into cooperating, all that technical knowledge required to keep Hell City a going concern is going to be lost. Or they'll get the bioforms to do it. I decide. He will, I mean. I assume that's feasible. The humans, meaning the Great Society of Thompsons, will put their feet up, and they'll make the bioforms keep everything running, if they can.
"Don't reckon we'll take to that,"
Marmalade grumbles. But I don't think the plan went that far. And even as we're coming into the upper layer of Hell City, the residential layer of streets, under a semi-transparent roof where the weak sunlight creeps in down the broad thoroughfares, I begin to realize just how screwed up this whole business is. Thompson has made himself the sole human being on the planet, Jimmy and the Adapts accepted. Everyone is Thompson. He's made himself into a colony organism that can expand forever, and yet will always only ever be him. One human face, stretched without limits. The big I am. And yet, just as he didn't want to bother with the wills of other people, not even collared people, he couldn't even countenance having to share the planet with himself. He's made sure that all his selves are slaved to his other selves, all the way up the line to some head Thompson with the power of life or death over Mars. And for a moment, I wonder if it's that easy. Kill the top dog, and it all falls apart. Except the Southampton protocols will deal with that. There'll always be a new chief so long as there's a Thompson left. The snake is all head. Up here, there aren't the places to skulk properly. And Marmalade's not a small bear to start with. And we keep ducking into doorways and behind buildings because there are more Thompsons up here. Jimmy tells me this is where they, the crew, didn't get to go. These are places set aside for the regular colonists of the future, big homes and business premises built, and then mothballed. Except they're all being opened up now. The Thompsons are choosing their new real estate, tearing off the wrappers and moving in. And then we see a bunch of them with guns. Big guns. Heavy bore long arms. Elephant guns, as I'd think of them. And from their reaction, Jimmy and Marmalade both never knew such things existed up here in Hell City. But Thompson did. And that's their lever against the bioforms, I'd guess. I remember very personally just how much Thompson enjoys shooting animals. When they've gone by, we slip into the next building. There are people moving above us, in the section that reaches past the roof of Hell City, the penthouse suite that has its own skylight and its own feeble strip of day. There are lights on up there, all tinted a blue that's meant to recall the skies of Earth. And people are shifting heavy objects. We creep up the stairs, or Jimmy and Marmalade do. There are maybe six Thompsons up there, all in women's bodies, and they're moving furniture. They're dusting. They're doing housework. For a moment, I can't quite work out what's going on, but no, these must be the lowest tier Thompsons, the ones who got the thin end of the Southampton protocols. Because Thompson doesn't know how to keep the air pumps or the extractor fans working, but he sure as hell knows what he wants his rooms to look like. From Jimmy's panicky glance up through the stairwell, I know one of them is Sugar. Now he and Marmalade are looking at each other, and really, both of them are looking at me. The network traffic has calmed a lot now the downloads are finished, and I have room to sneak into the system and then link to her headwear. It's busy in there, but then there's a whole extra obnoxious personality taking up the room. And if it catches wind that there's a dead digital bear trying to undo its work, then there's a whole city of its siblings who will come and express an opinion, some of them out of the barrel of a gun. And so I tell Jimmy and Marmalade that they better find somewhere out of the way to hide, because this could take a while. If I can do it at all, though I don't tell them that bit. They go lurk in the storage closet, while I set to work, trying to find subliminal access points to Sugar's headwear. It's not quick, and there are self-monitoring routines built into the implant that exist to track down unauthorized tampering. I don't think Thompson, the Thompson riding Sugar, is likely to consciously pick me up, because I doubt he's that introspective or has the relevant skill set. I do think that if he gets an alarm to say someone's poking where they're not wanted, he will reach the right conclusion very quickly. I think he's very sharp in a very limited way, but understanding threats to himself is definitely in there. And so I pick. I send messages. I spoof traffic. I isolate an ingoing connection the Hell City system uses to track biometrics and activate it, and alter its protocols until it can accept incoming data as legitimate. I falsify authorities and identity codes and sneak my fingers into Sugar's head, disguised as routine queries. And because I have no body and no sensory feedback, I imagine all this is a physical thing, with the great pulsating cyst that is Thompson's mind hanging from the ceiling above, as I inch in and start to dismantle him. I'm at it for over 2 hours, long enough that the home improvements crowd actually move on to another building, and we shadow them, because this is close work, piggybacking on the building's own internal system. I am very leery about interposing more nodes in the process, because response time is key, and because it might trip some alarm in the middle that I'm not aware of. And it's a little like the Gordian knot, if Alexander only had a tiny penknife instead of his mighty sword. I can't just cut Thompson's mind in half with one mighty sweep. And I can't let him know what's going on at any point before the end. So think of it as though I'm approaching that big old ball of string and severing each strand while leaving the shape of the ball intact. A death of 1,000 invisible virtual cuts, one after another, while Thompson just squats there, believing himself unchallenged and in control. And then, with the final whisk of my little blade, the entire thing unravels, falls into 1,000 severed inches of string, and he's gone from her headspace entirely. Nothing but a mist of ones and zeros dissipating into the electronic ether. I message Sugar immediately, telling her not to panic, but to come downstairs in a calm and orderly manner. But she takes the stairs two at a time anyway. When she sees us, her eyes are wide, and for a moment I think that the enforced captivity in her own head has been too much for her. Then she throws herself at Marmalade and hugs her fiercely. And she's fine. She's herself. And she's furious.
"Do it to the others," she demands. "Whatever you did."
Because she has no idea just how hard that was, just how laborious. There's no way I can go through the complement of Hell City one by one, even if somehow Thompson didn't notice what I was doing.
Speaking of which, we hear feet coming down the stairs, the rest of the furniture squad chasing their errant comrade. The smile is gone, but I know the nasty piggy look in all of their eyes. The idiot outrage of someone for whom the whole creation exists to be their extended body, to do things for them, to make their will a reality. And woe betide anything that doesn't play its part. Jimmy's already moving, and the three of us bolt into the street, where groups of Thompsons are turning to stare, all that imperious fury magnified across 50 faces. None of the firearm squads are immediately in view, thankfully, and we're already running. Jimmy has a fair turn of speed for such a weaselly man, and Sugar is riding Marmalade, like something out of a children's story. Bareback, if you'll excuse the pun, fingers dug into her pelt. Thompsons are trying to get in the way, but Marmalade scatters them like Skittles. And for a moment, nobody's actually chasing us, because running after things is a task that Warner S. Thompson has people for. He doesn't put in the legwork himself. Then, there are bears up ahead. And these aren't like Marmalade. Not sentient bioforms. These are like the ones that nearly got Jimmy earlier. The ones he calls bad news bears. Just part uplifted animals slaved to Hell City admin. Meaning, slaved to Thompson. Sugar drops from Marmalade's back as she rears up. And there are three of the bad news brigade right there, as big as she is.
"Go," I tell everyone, "just go."
And I attack the enemy systems, fighting admin for comms channels, sending denial of service attacks into the bad news BioWare, starting feedback loops in their collaring software. And it's all stuff I knew back on Earth, because I used to mess with collars for a pastime. For a moment, I've got all three of them, and they're lurching sideways, pawing at their muzzles, attacking the walls, moaning, because the poor dumb brutes have no idea what's going on. Then we're past and gone, even as admin reasserts its rightful dominion. We're gone in a way before they can chase us. But they'll be hunting us now. And even Sugar and Marmalade only have so many places they can hide.